Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Exchange 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by going into more detail on what we'll be covering. During the session, we're going to take a look at deploying Exchange Server 2007. We'll start with a run-through of the hardware, software, infrastructure, and security requirements that you need to meet before you can deploy your first Exchange Server. Then we'll take a look at the five server roles and discuss what they do and the options you have for implementing these roles within your organization before turning to a demonstration on administering the Edge server role. Later, we'll discuss the installation process itself and spend some time looking at both the GUI and the command line installation routines. We'll run through the short demonstration on deploying a new server from the command line. Finally, we'll talk about migration from the coincidence with earlier Exchange server platforms. We'll finish with a demo on moving mailboxes between servers using the PowerShell. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Next is a brief overview on what would be helpful, but not essential, for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we'll explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. There are four main topics that we will cover today. In the first part of the session, we'll review the pre-installation checklist. Then we'll discuss the five server roles. Next, we'll discuss the actual installation process. Finally, we will look at the coexistence with earlier versions of Exchange. Before we get started on the agenda, a quick word about Exchange Server themes. When Exchange Server 2007 was being developed by the product group, they had a number of key design goals, themes they wanted to address. The first theme focuses on making sure that IT professionals, you, get what you need. The product group wanted to make the installation easier and more focused. They introduced the role-based server rather than the monolithic, one-size-fits-all server platform from earlier versions. You can readily customize your servers to exactly fit your requirements by selecting the roles you want to install. You can then add or remove roles easily from the command line as your needs change. And to help manage these roles, the management and administration tools have been revamped. The console is far better than under Exchange 2003, being both easier to navigate and use. In addition, you can manage Exchange from the command line with a new PowerShell. Automation of tasks is much simpler through this powerful command line experience. The second goal, or theme, was to ensure that users' inboxes were more accessible. People want their mail from anywhere, and from many different types of devices, so a lot of work went into providing this access. There is far better support for mobile devices than ever before, and administration of these remote devices and support server-side protocols is much easier. We'll take a look later at Unified Messaging, a completely new server role, which enables access to an inbox from a telephone. So Exchange Server 2007 also focuses on making the inbox more accessible from anywhere. Finally, the product group wanted to ensure that Exchange Server would provide a reliable and scalable messaging platform. To this end, they've made some architectural changes, including, as we'll see, a change to 64-bit hardware. This allows Exchange to support very large numbers of mailboxes with larger capacity. While changes in the data structure mean that disk storage is used more effectively, in addition, local continuous replication, LCR, and clustered continuous replication, CCR, mean that Exchange is far more reliable and recovery from faults quicker. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, these three themes were kept to the fore, ensuring that the Exchange would provide the messaging system you need. Let's return to the agenda. In this first part of the session, we'll take a look at what you need to do before you can deploy the first Exchange server. We'll look at the minimum and recommended hardware requirements, general and role-specific software requirements, infrastructure requirements such as Active Directory configuration, and security requirements. We'll also spend a little time outlining the client-side requirements. The most significant change from earlier versions of Exchange Server is that in a production environment, Exchange Server 2007 requires a 64-bit processor. The change from 32-bit to 64-bit gives Exchange Server the ability to support larger capacity servers. For example, an Intel Xeon Pentium 4 64-bit processor or an AMD Opteron 64-bit processor is required in production environments. 32-bit installations are only recommended for training or testing environments. With regards to memory, although 512 megabytes is the recommended minimum, in busy messaging environments, several gigabytes of memory would be more appropriate. It's difficult to give an exact figure for disk space requirements, as this largely depends on your particular situation. More users storing more email messages means that more disk space, 1 gigabyte free disk space plus some 200 megabytes of system drive space, is required to actually deploy a server. But thereafter, the requirements are customer-specific. There are no special requirements regarding disk configuration. But clearly, a high-performance, fault-tolerant disk subsystem would be highly desirable, depending on the server role being deployed. Whatever disk configuration you opt for, NTFS should be the selected file system, as this provides the greatest capacity and reliability. Let's look at the software requirements. The exact software requirements depend on the server role that you install. However, all servers running Exchange Server 2007 also must run a 64-bit edition of Windows Server 2003, Service Pack 1 or later. In addition, you must install Microsoft .NET Framework 2.0 and Management Console version 3.0 with Beta 2. You will be prompted to install these components if they are missing when you attempt to deploy a server. Let's look at role-specific software requirements. Your software requirements will vary depending upon the role you have selected for a deployment. The mailbox role requires NetworkCom Plus, the World Wide Web service from IIS. A client access server requires the World Wide Web service from IIS to support HTTP clients. In addition, you must enable ASP.NET on client access servers. The unified messaging role requires a component called Speechify, which will install automatically when you deploy the unified messaging role. Finally, both the hub and edge transport roles require a number of IIS components to be installed. Your Active Directory environment and any existing Exchange organization must also meet certain requirements. An appropriately configured Active Directory directory service forest is a primary infrastructure requirement of Exchange Server 2007. The Active Directory preparation takes place automatically with the first server deployment. However, this action requires you to have schema and enterprise admin permissions. Alternatively, you can prepare Active Directory as a separate process before you deploy the first Exchange server. To do this, run setup from the Prepare AD switch. You will also prepare the schema as a separate process, which we will discuss later. Any domain that will host either Exchange services or Exchange users must be operating in Windows 2000 native functional mode or higher, including the forest root. You can make this one-way change with Active Directory users and computers. Because Exchange Server 2007 no longer supports coexistence with Exchange Server 5.5, you must remove all servers running Exchange Server 5.5 and switch the Exchange Server organization to native mode. Finally, any server that will host the Edge Transport role must not be part of the Active Directory forest and must be installed as a member or a work group. A couple of other infrastructure-related things. It's important to think about upgrading or replacing existing domain controllers and global catalog servers. These servers provide critical services to Exchange, and if they are unable to perform adequately, that will necessarily have a negative impact on messaging infrastructure. It would make sense to implement 64-bit hardware if you do plan to upgrade or replace these servers, as any organization with more than 2,000 objects will see performance improvements from using 64-bit hardware on operating systems. In addition, any organization with an Active Directory database in excess of 3 GB will benefit from the increased address space that 64-bit platforms bring, assuming there is sufficient physical memory already installed. For example, one 64-bit global catalog server based on a dual-core CPU with 14 GB of physical memory installed can handle the workload of 11 32-bit global catalog servers and so support 2,000 Exchange Server mailboxes. Let's take a quick look at some client computer requirements. The exact software requirements on the client depends on the type of client being used. If you want to connect to Exchange using the Microsoft Messaging API, MAPI, then Microsoft Office Outlook 2007 is the preferred client. Although both Outlook 2002 and 2003 are supported, of course, Outlook Anywhere, or RPC over HTTPS, as you may remember it, requires Outlook 2003 or higher. Outlook Web Access is supported over basic authentication from any web browser. Although you'd be well advised to implement HTTPS if you intended to use only basic authentication. If you want to use Digest, Integrated Windows, or Form-based authentication, you must use Microsoft Internet Explorer, at least version 5 or higher. Mobile devices must be running Windows Mobile 2003 or later to connect to Exchange ActiveSync. Other client protocols are also supported, such as POP and IMAP. Although Microsoft Office Outlook 2007 is the preferred client, it's worth noting that if you are using the older Outlook clients, you must specify this when you perform the initial installation of Exchange Server. If you do have legacy clients in use, specifying this in the installation process on the server enables things like public folders, which are not required for Outlook 2007. Specifically, calendaring for Outlook 2003 requires some folders, which are special public folders, support the publishing of free, busy schedule information, which in turn allows users to create appointments with one another. Since this information is made available using a web service for Outlook 2007 clients, public folders are not required for Outlook 2007 users. To perform an installation of Exchange Server, you must log on with sufficient privileges. If the Exchange Server organization has already been created, you need to log on to the intended Exchange Server as a member of the local administrators group. You will also need server admin permissions in the Exchange organization to add the server to the organization. In real terms, this probably means logging on as the domain admin and an Exchange admin. If the Exchange organization has not yet been created, you will need to perform this task either during the deployment of the first server or as a separate process prior to the first deployment. We'll look at that process later in today's session. However, to perform this task, you will need permissions to modify the Active Directory schema, which means that you'll need to log on as a member of both the Active Directory schema admins and the Enterprise admins groups. Naturally, this will mean that you're also a member of the local administrators group. Okay, let's take another look at the agenda. In the second part of the session, we're going to discuss the five server roles and take a look at how to administer them using the new Exchange Management Console. First, let's run through the basics. Server roles fall into one or two broad categories. One role is designed to be deployed in the perimeter network, outside the corporate intranet, with no access to Active Directory. The other roles are designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called the Edge Transport Server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message hygiene and routing engine. It's possible for filtering messages as they arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet. Although it's not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver message to the correct recipient, it needs access to the Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, ADAM, installed locally and synchronized with an instance from your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the Hub Transport Server. This role can be combined with others when required. The Client Access Server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAP, and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does as 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI client access or message routing, as these are handled by the other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing, and access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on a given task. The Unified Messaging Server is new and lets you combine email with both voicemail and fax services. When you install a Unified Messaging Server, you give your users a unified inbox. It links your PBX system with Exchange, handles phone calls, and provides answering service as well as voicemail. Next, we'll look at how you might combine these roles to support your organization. Now we put the whole thing together and step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about a message that arrives in your organisation. The Edge Transport Server sits isolated in the perimeter network, routing messages to and from the internet. Messages are filtered using agents, like the connection filtering agents, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from remote hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender, sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus and anti-spam solutions on the Edge Transport Server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement Edge servers, preferring instead to use a hosted solution, like Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services. Once a message is deemed safe, the Edge passes it along to the Hub Transport Server. Connectors are defined at both the Edge Transport and the Hub Transport Servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your intranet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector at the hub has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communications between the edge and the hub are secure and authenticated by default. On arrival at the hub transport server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message, consisting of conditions, actions, and exceptions. These rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations require that you store messages for search and retrieval on demand by the appropriate government agency. You may also have your own internal organizational regulations that require disclaimers to be attached to all messages. The transport agents provided in Exchange, running on the Edge and Hub servers, allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The hub transport server now passes the message to the appropriate mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from an MAPI client, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, he or she is notified about the arrival of the new message. If the user is connected through Exchange ActiveSync, Outlook Web Access, OWA, Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The message is retrieved by the remote client. The client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server, one that is in the same site as their mailbox server. It can take the form of either redirection, that is telling the client which server to use, or proxying. You will also need one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. Finally, the new Unified Messaging Server can link your PBX with your email. If the user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If the user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in his or her mailbox. Outlook, OWA, and EAS clients provide in-messaging controls to hear or respond to those voice messaging. Having outlined the server roles, let's run through them in a little more detail. The Edge Transport Server provides the foundation for a secure messaging environment. The role cannot be combined with any other Exchange Server roles, but you may also install ISA Server on the same computer. ISA can perform redirection to servers on the internal network, for example, client access servers. The Edge Server is lean. It runs only the services required to perform its function, providing a clean message stream. It has no access to anything sensitive, and the physical isolation provides additional security. In the event that the Edge server becomes compromised, it is not part of the enterprise. Indeed, it does not have access to much of the enterprise. The security compromise cannot proceed further. To enable the Edge server to pass messages to the appropriate hub server, it requires recipient information. This is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, or ADAM. This is made available from a hub server over LDAP port 1389. And is read-only at the edge. You can determine how much information to provide in this way at the edge. The Edge Transport Server, ADAM, is kept up to date using the Edge Sync, a synchronization tool with a subset of Active Directory recipient information that you have made available. In addition to recipient data, some organizational and routing data is also required. Let's chat about ADAM for a moment. ADAM runs as a non-operating system service, and as such, it does not require deployment on a domain controller. The primary benefit of running as a user service is that no domain controllers are needed at the edge. This obviously has significant security benefits. You can find out more about ADAM at the Microsoft Windows Server 2003 website. Let's talk a little more about the Edge server's other responsibilities. Let's discuss Edge Sync in a little more detail. Edge Sync is a collection of processes that run on the Exchange Server 2007 Hub Transport Server role to establish one-way replication of recipient and configuration information from the Active Directory Directory Service to the Active Directory Application Mode ADM instance on a computer that's Edge Transport Server role installed. Edge Sync copies only the information that is required for the Edge Transport Server to perform anti-spam configuration tasks. Information about the send-connect configuration is required to enable mail flow from the Exchange 2007 organization's hub transport servers to the Internet through one or more Edge transport servers. Edge Sync performs scheduled updates so the information at ADM remains current. An Edge transport server subscribes to an Active Directory site. The Edge transport server is associated with the hub transport servers in that site for the purpose of configuring the connectors that are replicated to ADAM during this process. The hub transport servers in the organization will then route messages that are being delivered to the Internet to the site with which the Edge transport server is associated for relay to the Edge transport server and to the Internet. When data is sent to the ADAM from Active Directory, it is sent hashed to protect the data. The LDAP connection is secured by the ADAM credential stored in the Edge subscription file. Edge Sync replicates the following data from Active Directory to ADAM. Send connector configuration, accepted domains, remote domains, safe sender lists, and recipients. Let's talk a little more about the Edge server's other responsibilities. A well-designed security infrastructure should deliver on two goals: simple to manage, built-in protection, and reduced costs. From the Edge transport server perspective, if you look at the two concepts of built-in protection and reduced costs and complexity, the goal of the Edge transport server is to keep your email safe by keeping the inbox safe and free from viruses, malware, and spam. A number of agents are provided on the Edge server. These include the address rewrite agent, the connection filter agent, the recipient filter agent, the sender filter agent, the sender ID agent, content filter agent, and the protocol analysis agent. Together, these agents analyze incoming messages to identify viruses, spam, or other undesirable content. In addition to these agents, the Edge can also be configured with a per-use safe sender lists. If you look at email use on the Internet today and historically, companies communicate in the clear. There's a sense of security, which is interesting, since the communications are completely unsecured. Exchange Server needs a way to ensure message security over untrusted networks. And so the Edge server has the ability to protect this business-to-business communications over both trusted and untrusted networks, keeping email not only safe, but also secure. Exchange Server provides a simple way to manage these communications with partners by establishing partnerships and enabling the levels of security that require with any given partner. Providing a high availability transport reduces the downtime, so the product group has included several features in the transport services. In the Edge services specifically, in Exchange 2007 that allow for high availability of messaging. It's worth noting that this message hygiene can also be deployed on hub servers in small organizations where no Edge server will be deployed. In this instance, smaller organizations might consider the use of hosted services to provide a clean message stream into the organization. You configure transport rules on the Edge transport server that provide message filtering. Filtering enables the Edge transport server to help eliminate spam, viruses, and other unsafe content, providing improved message hygiene before it arrives within your organization. To allow messages to flow to and from the organization, you'll also need to configure connectors to the hub transport service in your forest. Because the Edge transport server is a standalone server, you can use a customized version of the Exchange Management Console that is run locally at the Edge server. Now let's run through our first demo. In this demo, we'll take a look at configuring the Edge transport server. In this first demonstration, we're going to use the Edge Sync to create and configure an instance of ADAM on the Edge transport server. The process starts on the Edge transport server. A subscribed Edge transport server receives the following from the Edge Sync service: send connect configuration, accepted domain configuration, remote domain configuration, safe senders list, and recipients. We start configuring the Edge Sync services by creating an export file on the Edge server. Let's open the PowerShell. We'll use a new Edge subscription command and specify the export file name, which we'll place in the root of C. The PowerShell command copies the necessary configuration information to an XML file. The file contains the information required by the hub transport server to configure ADAM at the edge. We will copy the file to the hub transport server in a moment. If you have the multiple edge servers, you will need to subscribe to each of them in this way. Now let's copy the file to the SMBEX01. We'll just use the built-in share $C$, but we'll put it somewhere more sensible when we switch to the hub server in a moment. It's good practice to delete the file that remains on the Edge server. Okay, let's switch to the hub and continue the process. First, let's verify that the file copied from the Edge server will open my computer and look at the root of C. The file is there, so let's put it into a more sensible location. Let's create a folder called Edge Sync and move the file into that. Now we're going to create a new Edge subscription. Open up the organization configuration, click Hub Transport, and then click the Edge Subscriptions tab. Then run the new Edge subscription wizard from the Action pane. We'll specify the site name. The Edge server will obtain its Active Directory information from the hub servers in the specified site. In this case, it's a default site. Next, we select the Edge subscription export file that we created previously and stored in the Edge Sync folder. That contains all the information needed for the Edge Sync services to connect to your Edge server. Then we create the subscription. You can also use the shell to complete this process. The subscriber process have created the necessary send connector for the organization as part of the new Edge subscription process. On a hub transport server, the Edge Sync service synchronizes configuration data hourly and recipient data every 4 hours out to the Edge transport server. You can also force synchronization with the start Edge synchronization shell command. However, we'll return to the presentation. Let's take a look at the hub transport server role in more detail. The hub transport service is an entity responsible for providing confidentiality and tamper-proof communications within the enterprise and also preventing leaks from outside the enterprise. Exchange Server provides a solution for establishing and maintaining a level of security and confidentiality that doesn't require your IT staff to manage and maintain any sort of certificate infrastructure. The hub has built-in rules that enable you to enforce that certain types of communication should never leave the organization or should only go through secure channels to certain partners or whatever. The hub has the ability to retain the communications you need, to control where messages should be archived, and it provides a much higher level of granularity than Exchange 2003 does. Exchange Server 2007 improves the journaling infrastructure quite substantially, provides a feature set that enables you to comply with regulatory information retention, all of which contribute to you being compliant. From the point of view of high availability, Exchange Server 2007 has built-in facilities to protect against poison messages. That is, messages with a damaging payload attached or embedded. More advanced message tracking and logging capability, as well as the redundancy of servers in a site and cross-sites. All of this contributes to a highly available messaging backbone from a transport perspective. Of course, the primary responsibility of the hub server is to provide message routing within your organization. It is always used and never bypassed, even when two users in the same database exchange email. The hub server is engaged. This level of predictability is desirable because it means you always know where messages are going to and how they are going to get there, which means that troubleshooting is much easier. Removing the guessing game from routing reduces tremendously the maintenance cost associated with the email backbone. By having the ability to route based on decided affinity, Exchange Server is going to be far simpler to deploy and manage. You need to deploy at least one hub server per Active Directory site where mailbox servers will be deployed. To ensure communication to Exchange Server 2003, connectors must be created to the routing groups. From the Exchange Server 2003 end, the connector just looks like a routing group connector. Let's have a look at how the routing takes place within the organization. Communication from the hub server to the edge server to synchronize ADAM over edge sync occurs using LDAP port 1389. SMTP communication between the edge and hub servers takes place using Transport Layer Security, or TLS. This enhances security in transit. Kerberos authentication cannot be used as the edge server is not part of the Active Directory forest. Communication between hub servers, again SMTP, is automatically secured using TLS, this time with Kerberos authentication, as all servers are part of the same forest. What happens in routing groups? Well, I still support it, to ensure proper compatibility with Exchange 2000 and 2003. Exchange Server 2007 must support routing groups in such a way as to be transparent to the legacy servers, which it does. We'll discuss this later, but 2007 no longer relies on routing groups to be defined. Instead, it utilizes underlying Active Directory physical topology in terms of sites, sites links, and site link bridges. This makes life a lot easier, as these physical network characteristics only need to be defined once, when Active Directory is installed, rather than again when messaging is added. Once the Active Directory administrator has defined the IP topology in terms of subnets and physical sites, all client computers, server computers, and domain controllers know where they are in terms of the physical world. This makes message routing decisions together with service access decisions informed rather than arbitrary. All message routing is now direct relay, which means that the hub prefers direct IP connectivity between the source and the destination to route messages. The hub will avoid redundant intermediate computer transfers and will rely on IP networks for message routing in case of network failures. Direct relay is hub-to-hub between sites. The relay uses SMTP, intra-site relay uses MAPI communications, which is RPC-based. The hubs use deterministic routing and no longer rely on Exchange link state tables, which showed the status of links between routing groups in Exchange 2003. As a consequence, Exchange 2007 doesn't consume or propagate link state information. The routing topology is automatically generated, so you don't need to configure connectors to get messages flowing. Because the Exchange Server 2007 topology is based on Active Directory sites, many organizations can rely on these default connectors, especially if the existing routing group design was based on Active Directory sites. In fact, the Exchange routing table is a subset of the site topology. One final note. Co-located hub servers have higher precedence than those located on other computers. In addition to the connectors that you define on the edge transport server, you must define connectors on the hub transport server. Exchange Server uses the connectors to route messages between the appropriate edge transport server and other hub transport servers. You can also configure the hub transport server with transport rules. These transport rules consist of conditions, actions, and exceptions that filter all messages and determine what action to take on each message. Filtering enables the hub transport server to provide improved message hygiene for messages within your organization. By using transport rules, you can create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Next, we have the mailbox server role. The mailbox server role hosts storage groups and stores. In other words, mailboxes. Because a mailbox server requires directory access, you must assign this role to a member of an Active Directory domain. You can combine this role with other roles. When we think of Exchange Server, the mailbox role tends to encapsulate what we think of. It's the traditional role for Exchange, that is, a database for messaging that supports client connections to those databases, MAPI only, all other client requests are handled by the client access server role. The mailbox server can communicate with multiple hub servers in the same site, although it will default to using the hub transport role to install locally, if present. To provide for high availability, the mailbox server role supports cluster configurations. No other server role supports clustering, as only the mailbox role maintains stateful data. That is, mailbox contents. Typically, you'll use the console to manage storage group and store properties. You can add, remove, mount, or dismount stores, and all the related storage management tasks are accessible from the console. For reliability, the mailbox role also supports local continuous replication, or LCR. This provides a local replica of a storage group. LCR copies any changes to the storage group, such as delivery of message to the associated store to the replica. The transaction log for a storage group contains a history of all the changes made to the associated stores. A process known as log shipping synchronizes both copies to a storage group. You can either use the shell or the console to configure and manage LCR. Clustered Continuous Replication, CCR, uses log shipping to maintain a copy of a storage group on another server. The mailbox role is the only one that supports clustering in this way. There are some special steps required to establish CCR, but once it's up and running, you can use the console to perform day-to-day administration of the stores. Let's run through the client access server role. You must assign at least one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. The role supports connections from a variety of client protocols through virtual servers. These client protocols include OWA clients, Post Office Protocol, POP, and the Internet Messenger Access Protocol, IMAP clients, Outlook Anywhere, and the EAS clients. It also supports auto-discover services, which allow client computers to locate users' mailbox servers, even if the users don't know the name of the servers that holds their mailbox. The client access server role is similar in concept to the Exchange Server 2003 front-end server configuration. We'll look more closely at auto-discover next. The client access role also supports proxy and redirect services. With proxy, the client access server uses MAPI to communicate with the user's mailbox servers. Proxy access amplifies HTTP use across the network if the initial client access server is distanced from the mailbox server. With redirect, the client is pointed to the preferred client access server for the specific mailbox server. This is useful when mailboxes have been moved and are distant from the original client access server. You can combine this role with other roles. Let's expand on auto-discover services. The number one help desk cost for many customers today is dealing with people who are installing Outlook without knowing what the name of the mail server is. So Exchange implements a simple thing that has a dramatic impact. Auto-discover. If the user is on the corporate intranet connected to Active Directory, when he or she starts Outlook, Auto-discover will automatically get the settings required to configure Outlook successfully from Active Directory. Alternatively, if a user is outside the corporate intranet but knows his or her email address, the client device knows how to compute the URL, which is offered from the Exchange Client Access Server, and will download all the settings the client needs to connect to the Exchange server. This XML file has absolutely everything the system needs, from security settings, RPC over HTTP settings, the mailbox server. And it works on mobile devices too, so the only thing anyone will ever type in a mobile device is their email address, once, and the entire mobile experience will be set up. It's a scalable, easy provisioning experience with large cost savings for Exchange administrators. In mixed environments, where you have some legacy Exchange service running in either 2000 or 2003, the Exchange 2007 Client Access Server provides a link to these back-end servers. However, the client experience is Outlook Web Access 2000 or 2003, depending upon the version of Exchange installed on the back-end server. To experience Outlook Web Access 2007, you need both an Exchange 2007 Client Access Server and an Exchange 2007 Mailbox Server. Note that you cannot use an Exchange 200X front-end server to connect to an Exchange 2007 Mailbox Server. From the Server Configuration Work Center, you click Client Access. From here, you can configure Outlook Web Access for legacy clients. For Exchange 2007 clients, for public folder access, if they're enabled. You can configure Exchange Active Sync and Offline Address Book Distribution Web. There's even a link to start a wizard to configure Outlook Anywhere, or RPC over HTTPS, as it was previously known. For those of you who set this up in 2003, you know what a big deal that is. A couple of mouse clicks to get RPC over HTTPS functioning. Now let's talk about the Unified Messaging role. The Exchange product group designed the Unified Messaging Server role to provide a single container, the mailbox, for all disparate message types. With unified messaging installed in your organization, your mailbox might contain both the more traditional items, such as emails and calendar items, as well as faxes and voice messages. In addition, the product group sought to simplify administrative tasks by consolidating the infrastructure required to support both email and telephony in a single unified system. As a result, the unified messaging server consists of several components. The unified messaging server is able to deliver voice messages to your inbox using Simple Mail Transfer Protocol, SMTP, to submit the message to the hub transport server in the same Active Directory directory service site as the unified messaging server. The hub transport server then routes the message to the mailbox server that contains your inbox. The voice messaging system also provides in-message controls for both Microsoft Outlook and Outlook Web Access, OWA, to enable you to listen to your voice messages. If possible, the voice messaging system will resolve a caller ID to a name by using the Unified Messaging Enabled Users and Contacts contained in the Global Address List, GAL. You can also configure the voice messaging system to send a missed call notification when a caller does not leave a message. The fax messaging system in Unified Messaging supports three different fax messaging configurations. A single company fax number associated with a mailbox from which faxes are manually distributed, a fax number that is the same as your telephone number. If you answer the incoming call, you can use the Outlook Voice Access pilot number to redirect the fax to your inbox. If you do not answer the incoming fax call, the Unified Messaging Server automatically redirects the fax to your inbox. And you can have a separate fax and telephone number, in which case the Unified Messaging Server automatically routes incoming faxes straight to your inbox. Once the fax messaging system has delivered the fax to the appropriate mailbox, you can view it straight from the inbox using a variety of clients, including Outlook, OWA and EAS. It's important to note that the fax messaging system supports only inbound fax routing. The Unified Messaging Server also provides access to your mailbox using Outlook Voice Access, which supports both voice control and DTMF control. Whichever way you choose to access your mailbox, the feature set for Outlook Voice Access is the same. Outlook Voice Access enables you to retrieve your email, voicemail, calendar and contacts over the phone through text-to-speech conversations. The Automated Attendant Service provides automated switchboard services. The Automated Attendant Service provides automated switchboard services. You can configure the automated attendant to respond to the voice instructions of callers or to use dual-tone multi-frequency DTMF control, which provides a touch-tone interface. If customers will be calling different external telephone numbers, you can create a separate automated attendant object for each number. Alternatively, if the company has just one external telephone number, only one automated attendant object is required. But if you configure the object to forward to multiple extensions, these extensions can route customers to a department or to an individual. Let's see how to set up unified messaging. First, you need to create a dial plan, the basic unit of administration in unified messaging. It's the telephony extension numbering plan. All users within a dial plan can connect to one another with a fixed length extension. Each user has a unique extension within the dial plan. Next, you'll need a UPIP gateway object. This represents a physical voice over IP gateway from which a unified messaging server can receive calls. Third, you need to create a hunt group object that relates to a physical hunt group configured at the PBX to direct calls to a voice over IP gateway. The hunt group includes a pilot number as an identifier. An IP gateway object contains hunt groups. You can associate one or more hunt groups with a voice over IP gateway. The pilot number dictates the appropriate dial plan for a given call coming to a voice over IP gateway with multiple hunt groups. Next, you must associate a unified messaging mailbox policy with a dial plan. When you create the policy, you can define policy properties such as the maximum greeting length, the number of unsuccessful login attempts before unified messaging server resets the password, the minimum digits required in a personal identification number, PIN, and the restrictions on international calling. You can define unified messaging mailbox policies for distinct groups of users that have different voice messaging requirements, such as departments. Then the mailbox must be unified messaging enabled to be able to access unified messaging services. You must use the Exchange Management Shell to enable a user for unified messaging. Each user mailbox must be associated with a unified messaging mailbox policy and a unique extension number. Finally, before the unified messaging server can answer and process incoming calls, you must add the unified messaging server to a unified messaging dial plan. To administer unified messaging, use the Organizational Configuration Work Center. Now let's return to the agenda. In this section, we will take a look at the actual installation process and discuss using both the GUI setup program and the command line setup program. We will also see how to add and remove roles using the EX setup command. And then we will complete the section with a demonstration on adding a server role to an existing Exchange server. The main goal of introducing role-based installations was to enable administrators to perform installations easier. As we just saw, by breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing and access, the system works better, with the server able to focus on the given task. It also runs better because unnecessary components are not installed. Administrators have tried to work around the monolithic installation approach of early Exchange versions by tuning a server once it's been deployed, but this has proved time-consuming and may not be as ideal as it could be. The Exchange product group wanted to achieve a way in which the Exchange front-end server could be installed simply, requiring little in the way of adjusting things once it was installed. Just run setup, choose the client access option, the rest is done for you. One obvious benefit is the mantra, only install the services you need, can now be put into practice. If your company is a front-end server for OWA users, you need to install only the client access server role. By not installing the other unnecessary roles, the server's security is enhanced. In addition, you can truly optimize the server to that task or role. Mailbox servers have different jobs to do compared with the client access service on transport servers. In Exchange 2003, it was difficult to optimize a server that was hosting several redundant roles. With Exchange 2007, it just became a whole lot easier. Load balancing can easily be provided by installing multiple servers for a given role. The mailbox role also supports clustering, which we'll look at later in the session. Typically, you will need multiple client access servers to support remote clients and clustered mailbox servers to provide high availability of the stored processes. Applying server patches and updates can be a disruptive process for your users. If a minor security change is needed for the client access role in Exchange 2003, you have needed to apply the patch to all Exchange servers, regardless of their function in the organization, and possibly requiring a server restart. Now you can apply specific role patches and updates, which will minimize the impact on your messaging system. The final benefit of using server roles is that, from an administrative perspective, it's more intuitive. You understand what it is that the server does. It stores, it routes, it provides client access, and you can manage that role better. You realize how to optimize, how to plan for high availability of a given role, and the impact of unavailability. Using server roles brings enormous administrative benefits to you. Let's take a look at the actual deployment options available once you decide on what role you want to install. Before you start with any server installation, you'll need to be sure that the server computer meets the minimum hardware requirements, the operating system and the other software requirements are met, that Active Directory and existing Exchange organization requirements are met, and that you have logged in onto the server with sufficient privileges to perform the required task. Assuming that all prerequisites, which we discussed earlier, have been met, you insert the product CD and the deployment wizard starts. You can choose between a typical server deployment, which includes three core roles of mailbox, hub transport and client access, or you can opt for a custom installation. Having made your selection, proceed by clicking Next. If you opted for custom installation, you need to choose the server roles that you want to deploy. Remember, you cannot combine the Edge Transport role with any others. However, the wizard will dim the remaining roles if you select the Edge role. You can add and remove roles subsequently with Add or Remove Programs in Control Panel or from the command line using EX Setup. If this is the first server to be deployed and you did not prepare Active Directory using the Prepare AD Setup switch, you will be asked to define your organization name now. Built into the deployment wizard is the Integrated Best Practices Analyzer. This will perform prerequisite checks prior to attempting to install the selected roles. These checks include organization-specific checks, such as whether Active Directory is in native mode. It also performs role-specific checks, like whether a required software is installed. For example, the client access server needs certain IIS components to function. Assuming all is well, you can proceed with the installation. Otherwise, you're presented with a report as to why the installation can't proceed and allowing you to take the corrective action. For example, you might be notified that IIS components have not been installed, and although the organization checks were okay, the role-specific ones have failed. It's handy to be able to perform installations from the command line too. Exchange 2003 never really gave a convenient option to perform unattended installations. This has changed with Exchange 2007. Instead of running the wizard, you can open a command prompt and run setup from there. You can now create a simple one-line script or batch file that contains the command to deploy the server that you need. Perhaps a major benefit of performing command line setups, aside from the benefits of unattended setups, is that you can separate the forest preparation from the server deployment. When you run setup using the deployment wizard, if the organization hasn't been prepared yet, it will be done automatically during the server deployment. While that may suit you, especially if you're a single server organization, it may not if you have many servers. Organization preparation involves modifying the schema of Active Directory. Only members of the schema admins and enterprise admins groups can perform this task. In larger organizations, the tasks of organization preparation is usually performed by a different administrative team than the one that deploys servers. Server deployment requires reduced permissions, domain administrators and appropriate exchange permissions. Various command line options can be used to customize setup, and we'll review those in a moment, but one switch is the prepare AD switch. Exchange 2003 provided a similar mechanism, as you could run setup with the forest prep switch. However, this was followed by the domain prep switch, and then the deployment of the management tools was performed. Then you had to create the admin groups, and so on. In all, it was a confusing setup routine for many customers. Let's take a look at the command line switch. When you run setup from the command line, you can specify the mode of operation with /m. Choose between install default, uninstall, recover server, and upgrade. You can define the roles to install by using the /r switch. Separate multiple roles with commas. Select H for hub transport, C for client access, E for edge transport, M for mailbox, or U for unified messaging. You can also install only the management tools by using the option T for your server role. If you want to specify a target installation folder, use /t. Use prepare AD to prepare the forest, and prepare schema to prepare the Active Directory schema. Note that the difference is that prepare schema only modifies the schema in preparation for the installation. It does not create the necessary security groups in the forest route required to deploy Exchange Server. If you run prepare AD without having previously prepared the schema, the installation routine will prepare the schema at the same time as it prepares Active Directory. The option to separate schema updates from other Active Directory forest preparation tasks may be useful for larger organizations that have specific teams responsible for schema changes. In both cases, you must be in the same site and the same domain of the schema operations master to run setup with these switches. If you want to specify which domain controller will be read from or written to during the installation, use the /dc switch. It's worth noting that when you perform the forest prep, all changes are made at the schema operations master, so it's a good idea to perform the forest prep at the same site as the server, although you don't need to specify the server using the /dc. A typical setup command may be setup /r:u:m:h. That will deploy three roles, hub transport, mailbox, and unified messaging, to a server. The exceptor command is used to add or remove roles from servers that have already been deployed. It's also used to deploy custom mailbox servers. As with setup, the /m switch is used to define the mode of operation, and install is again the default. Roles are defined with the /r. And the same role names are used as with the setup. Multiple roles are again separated with commas. /dc can be used to specify a domain controller that should be referenced for the installation. Additional switches include /s to specify a source folder for the installation files and the number of switches that install clustering. It's outside the scope of this session to discuss the detailed requirements for establishing CCR, so we won't go into detail on the command switches now. It's great to be able to drop to the command prompt, run a small, single-line command, and deploy or remove server roles. The same prerequisite checks are performed as with any other deployment, and then the server is configured. Let's take a look at another demo. In this demonstration, we will perform the deployment of the mailbox server role to a new server. We'll use the command line setup program to run setup in unattended mode. In this demonstration, you'll see how to add a server role using the command line setup program. Let's add the required IIS components. Open up Control Panel, select Add or Remove Programs, and then click Add Remove Windows Components. Highlight Application Server, click Details, and select the ASP.NET component, which automatically selects the required IIS components and the COM Plus components required by the mailbox role. Files will copy, and then we can start the Exchange installation. This computer already has Microsoft .NET Framework version 2.0 and the new management console installed, so it meets all the prerequisites. Let's start installing the mailbox role. Open a command prompt, not the PowerShell, just a regular command prompt. Switch to the CD-ROM drive root directory and run setup with the /r:m switch to install the mailbox role. It will take a few minutes, so let's leave that running and return to the presentation. In the next demo, we'll be moving mailboxes across to the new server, so we'll know if the installation was successful then. After you have completed installation, you can verify that Exchange installed successfully by using the PowerShell command get Exchange server, which returns a list of Exchange servers and their installed roles. It's also worth checking the event viewer, specifically the application log, for events 1003 and 1004, which indicate that Exchange services are starting. Finally, you can open Exchange Management Console and run the Exchange Best Practice Analyzer to verify your server installation. Let's take a last look at the agenda. In this last segment, we'll look at how Exchange Server 2007 can coexist with earlier versions of Exchange Server and how to migrate from those earlier versions. It's important to note that there is no support for single organization integration or coincidence with Exchange Server 5.5. If you have Exchange 5, you must either upgrade all servers to Exchange 2000 Server or Exchange Server 2003, and then switch the organization to native mode to allow 2003-2007 integration and coexistence, or you must install Exchange Server 2007 as a separate organization. If you attempt to deploy Exchange Server 2007 into an Active Directory forest that contains Exchange 2000-2003 servers, the setup program will automatically detect the legacy organization. While you can install Exchange Server into a legacy organization, it does make management rather complicated, as there's little integration at the administrative level. For example, although the new Exchange servers are visible from the old Exchange System Manager, you will be unable to perform management on them. In addition, all the new servers will be installed into their own administrative group, called Exchange Administrative Group, followed by a random identifier in brackets. Likewise, the servers will be installed in their own routing group called Exchange Routing Group, with a random ID in brackets. If you are using the new Exchange Management Console, then legacy mailboxes are displayed. So although there is a degree of interoperation with the two management programs, it's not tremendously administrative friendly. At some point, you will want to start decommissioning your legacy servers and switch across to Exchange Server 2007 completely. This will involve moving the users from one server to another. There are a number of ways to move mailboxes. You can use the Exchange Server 2007 Move Mailbox Wizard, which supports multiple selections through the Exchange Management Console. Alternatively, you can use the Move Mailbox command from the PowerShell. This allows you to be very selective very quickly by creating a powerful series of commands to select the mailboxes you want. Note, you cannot use the Exchange Server 2003 Move Mailbox Wizard to move mailboxes from Exchange Server 2007 to Exchange Server 2000X servers. Nor can you use the 2000X Wizard to move mailboxes from Exchange Server 2000X to Exchange 2007 servers. Let's have a look at the two methods. To access the Move Mailbox Wizard, open the Recipient Configuration Work Center and filter the list of returned recipients that it meets your requirements. For example, you may want a list of all mailboxes on a particular server, so filter the list accordingly. Then you can select all mailboxes and click Move Mailbox to start the process. The wizard guides you through the complete process. The alternative is to use the Move Mailbox command from the shell. In the first example, the command creates a collection of mailboxes that have a name starting with A and moves them to a different server. The second, perhaps more useful command, creates a collection of mailboxes on server 1 and moves them to a database on server 2. Let's have a look at that in our last demo. In this demonstration, we'll move mailboxes from one server to another using the PowerShell Move Mailbox command. Let's start this demonstration by opening the Exchange Management Console and viewing the recipients homed on the SMB EX01. We'll create a filter where server equals SMB EX01 and we'll browse to select SMB EX01. Then we apply the filter. When we've moved the mailboxes, we'll check back, repeat the process and see that all the mailboxes have been moved. Now let's use the PowerShell to move the mailboxes. enter get mailbox, and then pipe the results to the where object command to create the filter for mailboxes where the server name is smbex01. Then pipe that subset of mailboxes to the move mailbox command, and specify the new target database, including the exbe01 server name. That's all there is to it. Now this can take a little while, so we'll just wait until it's completed. Let's close the shell and switch back to the console. We should be able to refresh the list. There are no mailboxes on the SMBEX01 any longer. Let's create a new filter to see which mailboxes are on the EXBE01. Once we've done that, we can see the command has successfully moved all the mailboxes quickly and efficiently. Let's return to the last part of the presentation. That concludes the presentation. We'll end with a summary of what we've covered today. During the early part of this session, we looked at the pre-installation requirements that must be met before you can deploy your first server, which included switching the Active Directory domain functional level to native mode or higher, removing all Exchange 5 servers, and investing in 64-bit hardware and operating systems. Not only is this a requirement for production versions of Exchange Server 2007, but it's something you need to consider for existing elements of your infrastructure. We've seen how Exchange Server now provides role-based deployment, which provides for greater flexibility in larger multi-server environments. We looked in detail at each of the roles: mailbox, client access, hub transport, edge transport, and unified messaging, what they do and how to administer them. We ran through both command line and graphical setup programs. In the demo, we saw how quick and easy it is to add and remove a server role, which makes your life as messaging administrators easier. Finally, we took a look at performing mailbox move operations, which is a supported mechanism to migrate your existing user base from legacy versions of Exchange to Exchange Server 2007. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc109 for more information on books, courses, certification, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It is an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short, 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft certification program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or a system engineer, MCSC, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications cover SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about.
TechNet Plus subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.